Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining me once again. This is Dr. John O'Keefe, your breakthrough specialist, and this is another edition of The Art of Abundance, the radio show that each week gives you tips and ideas on how to create success in your business and your life based on what successful people have already done so you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Thank you once again for joining me. I know that you have a lot of choices out there. I'm particularly excited this morning because we have a very special guest with us. We have Dan Radecki, who is the Chief Scientific Officer of the Academy of Brain-Based Leadership. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, John. Thanks for having me.
Hey, I appreciate it. I understand you've been doing a lot of traveling and you're busy with your organization, so thanks for taking time.
Sure, no problem.
And, you know, for the audience, before we get started, I want to tell you a little bit about Dan. Dan is the Chief Scientific Officer and founding partner of ABL. Dan has 20 years of corporate experience, and his passion is in leveraging his knowledge of behavioral neuroscience to create an optimal model for leadership. In 2009, he created the curriculum for the educational arm of the NeuroLeadership Institute and served as the lead professor for the first postgraduate degree and master's degree of science program in the Institute itself. Dan has taught over 400 leaders in 40 countries on the neuroscientific underpinning of effective leadership. Dan is also the senior director of research and development at Allergan, where he's the global leader for drug development programs. Dan holds a bachelor's degree in psychology, master in biophysiology, and a PhD in neuroscience. He's been published in Harvard Business Review and has lectured internationally on topics such as neuroscience of bias, creativity, leadership wisdom, and the aging brain. Dan, we're so excited because, you know, we share the same mindset in working with executives and training executives, and resilience seems to be a topic that is so important today. You know, we find that a lot of times people seem to think that success in itself is some kind of magic potion. You have to have the right education coupled with connections, coupled with luck. And our message is, you know, there is no magic to success. It's a science. So what you're talking about today is so important. And so let me ask you, why is resilience important for the brain?
Well, John, I can tell you, I couldn't agree with you more in terms of your take on this idea that there isn't a magic bullet for success, right? Whether it's your personal life or your professional life, neuroscience is really helping us understand the why of all these things. Why are people successful? Why can we optimize our performance? And one of the things that has been popping up lately in the science field is this idea of resilience. You know, everyone has their own idea of resilience, but for the brain, we're finding out how important resilience really is. So think about this. When you think about the idea of resilience and being a resilient person, our brains encounter about 11 million bits of information every moment during your day. 11 million bits of information. It's a lot of stuff that's going on that our brain has to deal with. And in addition to that, our society is becoming really complex, probably unparalleled in human history, where we're bombarded with stimuli from Instagram, constantly having emails available now on our wrist. We can look at our emails. We're used to getting this immediate gratification. We're used to having our attention divided, right? So our brain is paying a price for all this in today's society. If you think about it, our brain really hasn't evolved to the extent that society has evolved. So that's going to leave us with a little bit of disconnect, all right? And because of this, our brain is paying a huge price, all right? It comes at a risk of burnout. So one of the things that I see when I go and do lectures and working in the corporate world as well is how prevalent burnout is these days. And when we think of resilience, we sort of think of burnout, you know, in the same hand. Resilience to the brain is really being able to proactively manage the demands, those 11 million bits of information every moment. So think about it in terms of the way you would for the immune system in the body, right? The immune system is there to help protect the body against free radicals and damage. We also have this resilience in the brain. We have mechanisms in place that help the brain cope with all these demands that are being placed upon it every moment. So we need to make sure that these systems and these processes that we have these in place in our brain. We just need to make sure that they stay at peak performance and that they don't dwindle and fall apart like tends to happen in our society.
You know, that's so important because when clients come in, often they're executives for corporations and so forth, and they'll say almost to a person, wow, I'm wearing a lot of hats. Things are moving so quick. There's so many changes, and I'm feeling overwhelmed. And so what you're saying, it makes so much sense. People have got to learn the resilience portion of it because there's so much capability there. And so, Dan, what are some of the consequences of a non-resilient brain?
Yeah, so it's a little scary tagging onto what you said, John. Not only do I see that, like you do, with the executives more and more in the workplace setting, but I also see it with people in the personal life and in the field I'm in and some of the work I've done in the past, seeing it in children. More and more, it seems like we're getting kids who are falling prey to this lack of resilience because of the demands of our society today. So what you see for this non-resilient brain when people fall prey to this is, like I mentioned before, burnout, okay? You start to see loss of focus, loss of attention. Little things, like the inability to be creative. All of a sudden, you know, you're not able to have that aha moment, whereas before you were an insight machine, you're now starting to not be able to be as insightful as you were in the past. Another thing that you may see with lack of resiliency is, and you may not think that this is important, but a negative impact on social relationships. Because, you know, we need this resilient brain. We need our brain at full capacity in order to keep our emotions in check, right? Because we're constantly fighting this battle between our higher brain, which is that brain that makes us sort of uniquely human, and that lower brain from evolution. And as humans, we're good at this. We have this higher brain that can do it. But when we start to lose that sense of resiliency, our brain's higher abilities start to fall apart. And that's where you see these uniquely human behaviors start to suffer, like social relationships, the inability to, as I mentioned, to be focused and attentive. We tend not to be a really good friend in these situations, to our spouses or our coworkers. We don't relate well to people, and things like trust and bonding seem to fall apart. So that all gets factored into this when we talk about lack of resiliency. In terms of, you know, working in the corporate world and in the coaching realm, you'll see that people start to have biases pop up when they didn't before. And again, this is because you've got this old brain working against the higher brain, and without the resiliency, the higher brain tends to fall apart. So we start to become a little more biased, and our decisions aren't based on objective data. They're based more upon, you know, what we did in the past or how we feel about a topic emotionally. So when our resiliency goes down, we suffer from all these type of things, but we also see things like anxiety and depression popping up and attention deficit disorder. So these are some of the psychological maladies that are ailing society more and more. They're starting to go up. And one of the reasons may be, as I mentioned before, we're lacking our resiliency with our brain, and it could be due to because of all these demands society is putting on us.
You know, that explains a lot. And for the audience, I want you to listen to what Dan has said, is that there is so much pressure today from personal and business that it really would behoove you to take some time and research this kind of research and look at how you can train your brain, if you will, and become more resilient. You know, Dan, I have to tell you, I was in a meeting some time ago, and two things happened. Number one, if you didn't explain what you did in five words or less, a group of executives just kind of tuned out and went on to do something else. And number two, I noticed a very intelligent young executive. We were talking, and he seemed, when he had to make eye contact and have further conversation, he seemed to struggle when it got to texting and explaining all of the technical things. He really shined. So I can see what you're saying about that ability to be resilient being so important.
Yeah, John, and when you actually think about it from that perspective, it's even a little more scary because our brains are really good at adapting and changing. We call this plasticity, and they can actually rewire themselves, and they do rewire themselves and change moment to moment. But when you're in a situation like we are in the business world where you have this immediate access to information, you always have to be available and on, your brain starts to change and crave that. There's been some research done that even in children, but in professional individuals, where when that sound, when that beep goes off on your phone, indicating that you have an email, there's actually a reward area of the brain that gets a slight activation, a little boost of some chemicals that are rewarding in your brain. So what you're actually doing is creating an addiction to that smartphone and the messages coming up. And of course, then you have to read the message, right? Because you don't want to know, you don't want to be in the dark. You want to know who's texting you, who's emailing you. So we're actually creating this society, as you mentioned, of individuals who are preferring that, who are craving that form of communication and that instant access, rather than the old face-to-face interactions, which our brain has evolved to do. So again, it's setting up this conflict in our brain of the old brain wanting it the old way, face-to-face, dialogue, interaction, versus the new way, which is virtual.
You know, that is an incredible thing. And I have to tell you, by example, again, during a conversation, I noticed that process happening with the attention. Somebody was in mid-sentence explaining what their program was, their product and service, and two things. A text, you know, message came up, and it was just all of a sudden like they just stopped and had to go to the phone. It was almost not an option. They just stopped in mid-explanation. I was really surprised by that.
Yeah, it's frightening, isn't it? And at the surface of that, it literally is a physiological addiction, because their brain's being rewarded. That's what addiction is. It's a physiological addiction to that process, to having to respond to that text, to hearing that sound. And it's almost like a Pavlovian response in dogs. You hear the bell, you think you're going to get food. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that is. And that makes a lot of sense. So, you know, for the audience out there, once again, I'd like you to listen to what Dan has been saying about the things that are happening out there and look at what you can do to build resilience so that you can be use that wonderful, powerful brain you have to do the functions that you need to do without getting stuck with this process. And so, Dan, for those people who have maybe tuned in a little bit later, we're talking with Dan Riedeke, who is the Chief Scientific Officer of ABL. And Dan, if people wanted to learn more about what you're doing and more information, is there a way to contact you or a way that would be best for our people to get a hold of you?
Yeah, our website is www.academy-bbl.com, Academy of Brain-Based Leadership. And really what we do is look at I think I have a unique perspective because I'm a neuroscientist and I focused on the neuroscience of all this stuff for years, but I also work as a leader in the corporate world and work with mentoring individuals in this capacity. So it's interesting. You know something, but there's a big difference in knowing and doing. And so what we're trying to do is inform people about these processes we talked about, like resiliency, like creativity, like bias, and how the brain is acting. It's not judgmental. It's not something that you have to worry about, that there's a negative association connected to it. It's the way your brain works, right? And even talking about burnout and things that can happen with burnout, it's literally your brain changing itself and not becoming resilient. And we can see this. We can do imaging results on the brain and show this. So when people get a little bit of a self-awareness about some of these processes, just in terms of how the brain's working, it gives them that latitude to say, oh, it's not me personally. It's literally my biology. It's my brain. And if I can learn some strategies, that, for example, to help mitigate this resiliency problem, then that can go a long way in helping me with this.
You know, Dan, what you just said there, among the other things, is so important because I do find that. I talk with clients, and some of them actually have some guilt connected to the changes that they're experiencing or their lack of performance. They feel badly, that kind of thing. And it's really important to know that that's actually the brain doing the changing process and, you know, that there's something you can do about that. So thank you for that. I'm sure the audience will take great solace in that.
And John, there are some very simple things that can be done with that that we found from neuroscience that work for enhancing resilience. And interestingly, a lot of it is stuff that people may know already or may have practiced. But in a Western society, we're really skeptical. So we want to know the why. So what we focus on is, okay, here are some strategies, some practical applications to help you build resilience, or to help maintain resilience. And here's why they work. And for some reason, you know, you probably know this too. When you work with executives, they want to know the why, right? You can tell them, hey, mindfulness is great to enhance your resilience. But until you show them a peer-reviewed journal which shows data on the subject, they really don't listen. So we focus on trying to get the data behind some of these techniques.
You know, and that's such an important point because you're exactly right. You know, you can present things and it comes down to, well, why? And so the fact that you've got the hard science there to back it up is so important. And I just really appreciate the great work you've been doing. So, Dan, how does the stress factor factor into the equation, do you think?
Yeah, that's a big one. That's unfortunately, I've studied stress for a long time and the impact on the brain, and we don't typically think of stress impacting the brain. We usually have studied it over the decades in terms of what it does to the heart and the immune system. But we're finding really some astounding things. Stress actually physically changes the brain. Chronic stress, you know, stress that we may be exposed to in the workplace or in our personal lives over the years, it impacts the ability. Now remember I said that higher brain sort of manages that lower brain of ours, right? That's what uniquely human is. And what tends to happen is that when we're exposed to chronic stress, and we can see this when we look at brains, when we do imaging of the brain, the stress actually starts to atrophy or shrink the areas of our higher brain that we use to manage our lower brain or to manage our emotions. So there's, you know, we're all exposed to stress, but there's a happy medium. And if you get too much stress in your life, you're going to start to have physical changes in the brain, right? And so our brain, as I said, in today's society with those 11 million bits of information, we're pushing it. We're really pushing that edge all the time. And so what you can actually have happen is that higher brain gets stronger, or the higher brain gets weaker, and that lower brain, that emotional brain, gets stronger. So you have this imbalance. And this is really what burnout looks like. When you see someone who's undergoing burnout, they become emotional. It's almost like they're childlike. They don't have that higher brain to manage those emotions. And in the workplace, it can be very dangerous.
Oh, absolutely. And that factor, and you can begin to see it more and more, unfortunately, in highly placed executives and others in an organization, whether it's, as you say, personal life or business, you can see the changes when that stress takes over. And so, Dan, what can we do to help build our resilience?
Yeah, this is what everyone wants to know, because when I usually talk to people, they get really depressed about, at this point through the session, saying, wow, our brain changes, it shrinks during stress, and there's no hope. But there is. There's things that we found out that work. I mentioned mindfulness before, and mindfulness seems to be this huge topic of interest in the field. Mindfulness is just sort of like the focused attention, the opposite of what we tend to be doing in our society today. And there's lots of reasons why mindfulness or meditation seems to work to help build resilience. One of the reasons we think it's doing it is we think it's counteracting the effect stress has on the brain. So it's actually, there have been research studies looking at mindfulness and showing that it increases the size, literally the anatomy of certain areas of that higher brain to help counteract the effect of stress, to help now we can help manage our emotions and manage that lower brain. And we've narrowed it down to some specific chemicals that mindfulness may help with. There's chemicals in the brain that sort of do housekeeping. You know, they clean out all these metabolites and they help with building networks that we need to build within the brain. And what we're finding with mindfulness and also with exercise is that these interventions build these chemicals. They help, it helps release more of these natural chemicals in our brain to help with the, to help the brain being healthy and to help it with generating new neurons, which it does in certain places. So mindfulness, exercise is another one. Some of the current research on sleep is really interesting. We're finding that sleep and well-rested sleep and dreaming helps a lot with building resilience. And there's some current literature on that. You know, John, we used to think dreams were just sort of a nice to have, and we really didn't understand what dreaming was all about. Now we're finding out that one thing dreaming may do and the purpose it may serve in humans is to help triage and make sense of all those 11 million bits of information that hit your brain every moment of the day. So dreaming and well-rested sleep seems to be really important for us to maintain a resilient brain and to enhance things like creativity and empathy and being in a positive social relatedness state. So we're finding out a lot of really interesting techniques. And like I said before, we knew that these things were important in our lives. We knew exercise was important and sort of a mindful state. But now we're starting to understand the why. And again, that seems to be really important to people, particularly in that executive space we work in.
You know, that's amazing. And it's incredible about the processes that can take place. You know, I know that in your vast experience and all of the encounters you've had with organizations and people and executives, is there perhaps a story that stands out or an interaction that you had with a person or an organization that really really underscores what you're talking about?
Yeah, I in my own team, because I lead some teams globally, and I think putting this into practice in a very simple way, even if you just had take baby steps, right, something very simple. I had a team, a global team, that because of the way we are, we have different biases for people who are not like us. And we had a teleconference between us and our team in London, and we had a couple team members who obviously were very different cultural backgrounds. And we were trying to just implement something to really make people have enhanced the sense of relatedness or communication. And what we did was just simply went around the room before we started, and we shared something that no one knew about us. And I do this today with my teams. So just simply, it's sort of like an icebreaker. I know teams do that too, but it really works now. What we're finding is when you meet someone, and particularly in virtual societies today where you're not seeing their faces, and you're just hearing their voice, and if you perceive that they're different than you, right, if they have a different accent or a different point of view, you're immediately going to go to this part of the brain that says, oh, they're different. So you're going to literally treat them with a different part of the brain that you treat other people who are your friends. So when you go, we went around the room and we did icebreakers, and we talked about something that was meaningful to us, so just a little bit of information that people may not know. And it turned out these two individuals, soccer fans. In fact, they both were fans of Manchester United, which is a soccer club in London. And so when they found this out about each other, they immediately bonded, even though it was something silly like just a soccer team, and they had didn't have face-to-face interactions. That little tidbit of information shared, they had a commonality that they now shared, right? And so that part of the brain that that deals with other people now was able to be appeased a little. And they started to deal with each other more in the way they would deal with themselves. And there's a lot of research pointing this, that if you share commonalities and if you find commonalities and not focusing on differences, you literally change the part of the brain you use to deal with those people. And they become part of what we call your in-group. And so from that point on, these two got along really well, and we tended to be more productive because we didn't have the constant arguments and confrontations that we did in the past. So just something simple like that. When you understand the brain, how the brain works and how the brain sees the world, you can implement some of these little strategies, and it really tends to be helpful.
You know, and that's such important information, and thank you for that. That kind of leads up to our last question as we come to, well, I guess when you're having fun, time flies. And my question for you is, if you had one piece of advice to give somebody who's listening today with regards to what we've been talking about, what would that be?
I think, well, that's a good one. I think after talking with and working in this space for years and incorporating all the the neuroscience of it. I think the one thing that I would, the piece of advice I would give is that since we're all stressed, by virtue of being human, you have daily stressors, some more than others. I think the important thing that people need to understand is what we found in studying the brain over the years is that how you perceive your stress in daily life is probably the most critical factor of how it affects you. Something called perceived sense of control. If you think, if you have this victim mentality where you feel that this stress is out of your own control and you're a victim and no matter what you do, you're not going to make a difference, then that stress is going to physiologically change your brain to an extent that you can't imagine. If you feel like you have some control of it, or if you feel like you can do something about it, then it literally changes the way that your brain's going to handle it. So my piece of advice would be to avoid at all costs that victim mentality and get to a point where you have a sense of control over your stressors in your life. That's probably one of the biggest factors in terms of how that stress is going to affect your brain.
Well, thank you so much, Dan. You've been a treasure trove of information and some great examples. So, audience, we've been talking to Dan Radke, who's the Chief Scientific Officer of the Academy of Brain-Based Leadership, and I urge you to check into his website and to a plethora of information that he offers, because it's going to improve your business and I think your life. And so, Dan, thanks so much. As we end for the audience, I want to ask the audience to listen to what Dan has said today and make it work in your life. So go out there and have a great week. This is Dr. John O'Keefe, your breakthrough specialist. If you need to get a hold of me, you can reach me at www.centerforpeakperformance.net. And always remember, if you think you can, you can. If you think you can't, you're right. Take care, everybody. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, John.